We're joined this morning by Jeff Berger, who has put together Lennon on Lennon, Conversations with John Lennon. It's a unique way to, I guess, put a book together, but you've done a couple of these already, Jeff, where you kind of have go through interviews that the celebrity or the individual has done over their lifetime. This goes from 1964 to 1980. How do you acquire or hunt down all of these different types of interviews that radio, press, TV that a person has done over their lifetime?
It's a lot of work. As you said, I've done this before. This is my third one for the series. I did once on Springsteen and Leonard Cohen before this, and they get easier because you kind of get the process down. I can't imagine doing this in the days before the internet. That did help me track things down, but you know, with Lennon particularly, you're dealing with somebody who's been gone for more than 35 years. Many of the publications have folded. Many of the interviewers have died. So you have to track down where a good copy of the interview is and where who owns the rights. And so it takes a lot of detective work.
And some people are more private than others. Was there, among the different sources, one that might have been extremely obscure?
Oh, yeah, there were several. I don't have the table of contents in front of me, but there was, you know, there were, some of these came from very small publications. There was one that appeared in a college paper in England called Unit, and in fact, only a small portion of the interview appeared in that publication, and I got the whole interview. There was... There were also a couple of interviews with an American radio personality named Howard Smith that aired on the radio in New York in the late 60s, but early 70s, I guess, but then sat in a box for 40 years and only recently were unearthed.
Sometimes when you go through these, you kind of find repetition. Maybe there's sort of a time in a person's life, and they're kind of focusing on the same thing. This goes over, decades with John Lennon. Talk a little bit about how maybe things have changed for him, or as far as what we see as a young man developing into an icon of sorts and a father, and how does that play into the stories?
Yeah, if I could just briefly comment on that. You mentioned repetition. Comment on that first. There is a little repetition inherent in this format, and in all three of my books and in other books in the series, you'll see occasionally the same question gets asked again and the same answer gets given, and that's just one of the facts of the format, and I think it's kind of good because you get different shadings on the answer, and the fact that it comes up again kind of emphasizes its importance. But the only way to avoid any repetition would have been to take out parts of the interviews, and I think people would rather hear the whole thing. As far as how interviews over time, how you can see the change in a person, I think that's what you were asking?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, with this chronological format, you really do see a lot of change, and John Lennon changed as fast as the Beatles went from "I Want to Hold Your Hand" to "Strawberry Fields Forever" in 3 years. And Lennon himself changed just as quickly and just as dramatically. In the early years, he's not political at all. He's just singing love songs and swept up in Beatlemania. But then he becomes very, very political and gets involved with characters like Jerry Rubin and Abby Hoffman, and he's talking socialism and communism. But then by the end of the book and the end of his life, he's very cynical about a lot of that. He hasn't become right-wing or anything, but Jerry Rubin, who he'd called a good friend, he's no longer taking his phone calls and so on. The Beatles, was swept up in it in the early days and then later called the Beatle years complete impression and complete oppression and humiliation upon humiliation. Then at the end of the book, he looks back fondly on those years. His personality changes. He's a tongue-tied kid in the first interview, and he's a sophisticated world traveler by the end. So a lot of evolution there.
We're talking this morning with Jeff Berger, who has put together Lennon on Lennon, Conversations with John Lennon. How much Beatles talk is in a book like this? When people wanted to talk to John Lennon, did they want to talk about the Beatles? Did they just
want
to find out more about him?
It was hard to avoid, even in the years after the Beatles broke up. I mean, there's rarely an interview where he wasn't asked whether the Beatles were going to get back together again in the years after they broke up. And in fact, you can see in the final interviews, I think, signs that if he had lived, a Beatles reunion would have been very possible. He was certainly open to it at the end. But there's a lot of Beatles talk. There's one particular interview with, I mentioned Howard Smith earlier. There's an interview where Howard Smith and John Lennon and Yoko Ono are all lying on Lennon and Ono's bed in Greenwich Village, New York, and talking for hours while a Beatle Fest goes on the radio, and they're playing old Beatles songs. So various songs would come on, and Lennon would say, "Turn that one up," and he'd comment about how he recorded the song and so on. And there are interviews in the book, of course, from the Beatle years. There's one where he and Paul McCartney go on television together. There's another one from 1964 in the early Beatlemania days where Lennon talks to a reporter in New Zealand about the Beatles. So, yeah, the Beatles are all through the book.
Jeff, I always had the impression that where John Lennon went, what he did, there was a certain energy, maybe a certain edginess to it. And I was looking at the part about when he got together with Phil Spector to do the rock and roll record. There seemed to be good intentions from the get-go, and then things went sideways. Not necessarily John's fault, but things just happened.
Right. Well, I think that's explained with two words, Phil Spector. There are Phil Spector stories in my Leonard Cohen book, too. He also tried to make a record with Phil Spector that pretty much went to hell. Phil Spector, brilliant producer. I love his work from the 60s, but he became a very, very erratic personality and difficult to work with, and John Lennon had to end up finishing his Spector project without Spector.
I'm looking at different interviews, and as you mentioned, they come from TV, radio, newsprint. There's the one from The Tonight Show where Joe Garagiola and Tallulah Bankhead are having a conversation with John Lennon.
Right.
To be a fly on the wall, or as it were, we're watching it from TV. So obviously different interviews put them in different lights, and it's kind of interesting to read some of those things, too. I appreciate it.
Yeah, and most of them, in fact, are not even interviews. You may have noticed that in my earlier books, the word interviews is in the subtitle. In this book, it's very deliberately conversations, because he really didn't have... The Garagiola thing was an interview, but there are very few of those in the book where there's a kind of a formal Q&A. Most of these are conversations with friends, and there's one where he goes on the radio and plays disc jockey and reads the commercials and does the weather. There's that one where he's lying on his bed with the DJ. There's one where he spent a whole afternoon talking to some young students. They're more conversations than interviews.
So they come from a place where maybe they weren't initially even used for published, or they were just somebody had a recording of this, and
there are a few that were not published at all, like this one with Timothy Leary, but most of them were published in some form, but he just didn't approach them as formal interviews. He just liked to talk and debate and discuss with people, and he didn't see it as a conversation as a formal interview.